Log Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call me
home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show on Blog Talk Radio. Today is, what is today?
I do it all the time.
Today is the 23rd.
Today is September 23rd, 2009. And
it's
we'd like
that coffee.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to tell that to the people. It's the bloopers tonight with that one. So we're going to do the bloopers with that, ladies and gentlemen. All
right. That's right. Always fun to have the bloopers.
Yes.
Yep. I'm your host, Lucinda Fierros, with my co-host, Robert Boyd. And tonight, our topic is, as always, The Streets Don't Love You Back. And tonight, we have our guest, Jeremy Williams, who is the author of the book, Black Bottom Community. And we will be talking to him in a few minutes about his new book. And we just want to give you a little bit of information. We have our Change TV reality show that is still going to begin in October, and that will be showing in Cincinnati, Ohio. And then we have our new mixtape soundtrack that will be out also on October 1st, and you can get that off of our website. We're also at Harlem World Books and Video in Detroit, and we also have a few new places where you can also get our books and the soundtrack. We have a place in New York at Human Bookstore. We have a place in Cincinnati at Best Wireless. And today we added a new place up in Oregon. And what's the name of that store? What's the name of that store up there in Oregon?
That store is Jack Brown's Bookstore.
Yeah, Jack Brown's Bookstore. So all of that information is on our website, and you can log on to www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com, and you can get all that information there. So welcome to the show, Rob, and welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. So tonight we're going to have a great, great show, and as always, Miss Lucinda is always up front and coming forward with the situation. And tonight we got a brother out of my hometown, Detroit, Michigan, with his book and the Black Bottom Community. And we're going to be discussing his book and his topics and where he come from and what had him change his life. So we want you to introduce yourself, Mr. Williams, and we'll take it from here.
Thank you. My name is Jeremy Williams, and I am from Detroit. Born and raised, and I don't live in Detroit right now, but I am going to be probably moving back to that area, probably Chicago, next year.
Sounds great. And today we're going to be talking about Mr. Williams' book, and I would like for you to iterate on your book a little bit for a minute, Mr. Williams, and then we'll get into asking you some questions about the book and about how you came about the book coming about to reality.
The book is called Detroit, the Black Bottom Community, and it's essentially about Black Bottom and how it emerged out of the need for Black migrants, Southern migrants, coming to the North to get jobs in the, not just to get jobs in the booming auto industry of the early 20th century, but to get away from a plantation life, the sharecropper lifestyle, and to come to the North to find a better life for themselves. So it's dealing with that Black community between 1914 and 1951, because 1914 was the time you see Blacks, a significant number of Blacks coming to not just Detroit, but other northern areas that were offering jobs in the auto industry. And then I ended at 1951 because that was the time when Black Bottom was demolished. So we're talking about the time between World War I and World War II, essentially.
Okay. So we would just like to ask you, growing up in the city of Detroit, what area did you grow up in, and how was your coming up at the time of you being raised in Detroit?
Well, you know, I grew up in on the east side, down in the Jefferson and Harding. I lived on Harding Street, but down in that Jefferson area, not far from Belle Isle. And I really had a pretty good childhood, especially I was born in 67, so coming through the 70s, you know, I had a good time, my mom and dad, and it was 12 of us, actually. It was a very large family, and my dad bought a house on the boulevard because the houses were really big and cheap at the time. Yeah. I think he paid like $12,000 for it. Can you hear me?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I think he paid like $12,000 for it. But I had a really, really good childhood up until when my dad passed in 75, then my mom was, you know, stuck with 12 kids, and it was a tough one. But I had a really good childhood. I didn't get, you and I discussed your book earlier, and I saw a lot of, but let me back up first. Up until my dad died, then things got a little rough. But when the early 80s came into play, and what I call the crack cocaine era, that decade of the 80s, my mom shielded me, all of us, from a lot of that because she was strict. She was from the South, and she had grown up in a big family. She had grown up on the Jack Perry plantation and in a very tight-knit community, and she was used to that. She was used to strict discipline and hard work to, you know, keep an idle mind occupied, so to speak. So we didn't really get into when a lot of my friends in my school went into the drug trade, if you will, and we didn't do it because my mom just wasn't having it. She ruled with an iron fist, and you're going to do it my way or else. I remember one time my brother, you know, he started trying to get into the gangs, and my mom whipped out her gun and pointed it at him and said, either I'm going to kill you or they will, and make a choice. And he straightened up right away. So it didn't really affect me. I mean, it was all around me because I was dead smack in the hood. I saw a lot of my friends die in front of me. A lot of my friends stopped coming to school to go and sell drugs, and so I was in the midst of it, but right. I wasn't affected by it personally. So again, my mom just wasn't happy.
And when you came from the boulevard, y'all went down on Harding, or you came from Harding to the boulevard?
We went from the boulevard to Harding. When my dad died, my mom moved because she wanted a smaller house.
Right.
And the house on the boulevard was really in bad shape by that time. But we moved up to Harding. It was life. Hey, I'm telling you, life was really great before the. You got to understand what the crack cocaine era did, and you would know.
I was the one that was putting it out there, one of them, so I know what it was doing to the community, you know?
Yeah.
The neighborhood that you stayed in on Harding, I used to be in that neighborhood all the time, down by Little Bridge, Harding, all through there.
Yeah, right there.
That was the black gangsters neighborhood back in the day over there. And used to be down there. So, yeah, I know all about that neighborhood, you know, Marlboro and all through there, you know, St. Clair, mm-hmm. you know, you was right
yep,
over
St. Clair, the street right over from me.
Right, so we all used to hang down there. That was BK territory, and the other side was Black.
Yeah, sure was.
Yeah, they was
sure was
all the way down to Jefferson. Little Man, Big Man, Curry, Sox, $1.50, and all them. So, yeah, mm-hmm. he was in the neighborhood, and that was definitely infected, and it's a blessing that you didn't get caught up in that era because there were so many people getting caught up in that era back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
That was a true blessing that you didn't have to learn that the streets didn't love you back, you know? So that's a blessing from God.
Well, hold on for a minute. I understand that. I mean, the neighborhood was rough.
No doubt.
And I'm sure it affected me in some way or another, but not in a sense where I joined, you know, gangs
right.
and stuff like that.
And you didn't have to live a penitentiary life and all that.
No.
Right.
You didn't get totally
affected. You just got affected because there was so much going on in your neighborhood.
So much going on.
And you just wanted things to be right, But you as one person couldn't make everything right because it was just
right.
So many things that was happening. So we definitely understand that. So what we're going to do, we're going to go to a song, The Streets Don't Love You Back. We're going to kick that off. And when we come back, we're going to come back with my man, Mr. Williams, and we're going to turn the mic over to Lucinda so we can get the show rocking.
Yeah, yeah, just The Streets Don't Love You Back. We dedicate this to all the youths across America, all those who've been abandoned by their parents and loved ones. We let you know that God is good, always. Even when no one else cares, He's there for you.
Oh,
keep your head up.
Oh, hey, The streets don't love you back. I hear grinding and a life of crime. The streets don't love you back. Show me one rule, baby, I don't get mine. The streets don't love you back. It's only one way on this lonely road. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call me home. The streets don't
never love you.
This is Rob Boyd checking in, letting you know the streets will never ever love you back.
When I was abandoned
by my father in this world,
when I was abandoned
by the man that I thought loved me,
it took my whole life in another direction, my mind. How can you say that you love me in this world? Never did nothing for me or my mama or my sister in this world. How can you look at yourself and be proud of what you've done? Now I say to myself, as a little child, I went to the street world, and I had to learn that it didn't love me back. Now I look at life so much in a different frame, my mind. Now I know the streets will never love me back. I thank God for what He done for me, 'cause I listened to my mama in this world. Now I tell all the children, all the little boys and girls, the streets will never love you, will never love you back.
The streets don't love you back. I hear grinding in a life of crime. The streets don't love you back. There's only one rule, baby, I'ma get mine. The streets don't love me back. There's only one way on this lonely
road.
The streets don't love me back. I gotta do right before they call me home.
I
know I can't change the way your young mind thinks, and I know you wanna lounge, smoke weed and drink. And I really ain't all the type to give a speech or preach, but I promise God that I would do this if you get me out the streets. See, when I was coming up, motherfuckers was loyal, but now they cracking under pressure when the situation boils and comes to a head, another fork in the road. Everyone got affidavits, show they codies told. They wasn't scared to do the crime, but now these motherfuckers cowards. The county was one thing, but now with no more private showers, it's all in the open. Better learn to be a man, fuck all the pistol popping, yapping. Should've learned to use your hands, went from pod storms to day rooms to mess halls and wreck yards. You think you something special, everybody's got it hard. Penitentiary ain't like it is on TV, and a fair joint is something hope you never have to see. I don't care how tough you think you are to humble your ass. They got a room especially for you just to beat your ass. Shit sad, it's hard, raced by the streets with no dad, but going life or death impression ain't gonna never change the past, cuz. Yeah, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I like to dedicate this track to my mother, my brothers, my sister, to my man LD, his wife Holly, to my manager Lucinda, to my two sons, Michael and Robert. Dedicate this to my homeboys, the Bishop Crew off Van Eyck and Harper, the Brewster Project, my man Chickaria, Warner County Project, 430 Crew, Day and Fab, rest in peace. Let's do this. You live on through my vision. The streets don't love you back. One of your own made it. Now we tell the world, the streets will never love you back. Change your ways. Change your ways. Change your ways.
Yeah, yeah, and welcome right back here to Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. And we're kicking it with my man, Mr. Williams, tonight. And we're going to turn the mic over, like I said, to Miss Lucinda, and she can get the show cracking.
Yeah, I was feeling that.
Hey, thank you, my brother.
I whipped out my guitar. I was trying to follow along. The streets don't love you back.
Well, no, yeah, that's one of the singles.
That's right there.
Yeah, that's one of the singles that's going to be on the soundtrack. So definitely make sure you go, you know, get that off the line when it's available, October 1st. So we appreciate that, Mr. Williams. So, Miss Lucinda, make it happen.
All right, again, we're talking to Jeremy Williams, and in a little bit, if anybody wants to call in and talk to him or ask questions or has any comments, you can call us at 347-826-7273. Okay, Jeremy, how long did it take you to write this book about the Black Bottom?
It took me, well, my editor gave me a year. I think I signed the contract in October. And then they expect the book, she expected the book to be completed by June, and it would be out in October. So, but I was done by February. I was in Detroit for the last half of last year, and I was doing the research, going to the archives and the libraries in Wayne State and U of M. And then once I collected all my data, I came back out to Arizona and got my laptop and went to this nice little cafe spot and got busy.
Right. So you're from Arizona now?
I'm in Arizona right now.
Okay. What credentials establish you as an expert in your field?
Well, probably just the fact that I have a degree in history. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, if you're talking about just plain old writing, you know, I've been writing since I was, I think, in middle school. And then when I got to high school, I started developing my writing a little more, writing poetry, and then I wrote a couple plays and on and on. And then I was in a band, and I was writing music for the band. And so I've always been writing, but as far as credential-wise, probably the degree, but I think the credentials lie in the fact that you are writing. You know what I mean?
It's just something that you like to do.
Mm-hmm.
It takes somebody that really likes to write and do that to be able to put something together like that, especially to do all the research that you had to do for it. What was your motivation for writing this book?
Well, growing up in Detroit, I had always heard the stories about Black Bottom, different tales. My dad took my mom on their first date to the Flame Bar, which was a really popular spot in Black Bottom. I think they went to see Billie Holiday. And then there's a band, funk band called the Black Bottom Collective. Their bar is called Black Bottom. And so it was always, the memory of Black Bottom was always alive and kicking, and I was always hearing the stories growing up as a kid. And then when I went to college, I took a Detroit history course. And in those types of seminars, you have to finish the class up with a term paper. And so he said, hey, do anything you want to do. And right then and there, I knew I wanted to study Black Bottom. That's where it really took shape and form for me. And ultimately, the book, I decided to turn it into a book.
Now, you mentioned earlier that area had been demolished. Is that what you said?
Yeah, by 1941, Mayor Edward Jeffries had decided to get rid of the community. I think the whole urban renewal movement is happening nationwide. So they started to build freeways, like I-75 runs through there now, and that's how it fell. So it's not there anymore, of course.
Okay. So just the area, I mean, it was rebuilt up on that same area.
Obviously,
yeah, it's still the ghetto part of Detroit, or the east side, right?
Yeah. Matter of fact, there's the Detroit Writers Guild just put a plaque down there, which was Harmony Park. Now it's called Paradise Valley Park.
Okay.
And Paradise Valley, as you know, was the main entertainment strip that ran through Black Bottom up Hastings Street. And sometimes a lot of people get that confused with Black Bottom. They think Black Bottom and Paradise Valley is two different, it's the same place, and it's actually two different places. The Black Bottom was the residential area, and Paradise Valley was where they went to, you know, have fun and party and businesses, prostitution, everything.
Right, right, all up Mac and Hastings Street.
Right.
Yeah.
So you said they put a plaque. Was it just like a history monument type of marker?
Yeah, they just put that up. I believe they had that ceremony earlier this year, maybe June. They put a little plaque up down there, and they had some kind of commencement ceremony where people came out and celebrated the memory and the history of Black Bottom and Paradise Valley.
Mm-hmm. So in researching for your book, did you come across any surprising facts or any statistics that you didn't think you would find there?
Well, the first thing that I learned, which was very interesting to me, was how it got its name. A lot of people think that, well, growing up, I was told that it was Black Bottom simply because it was black people there, and that wasn't true. It was actually called Black Bottom because when the French settled the area, came in the early 18th century to settle the area, they settled that area because the soil, we're talking about an agricultural environment at this time, the soil was dark and rich and ripe for planting to, you know, crops and whatnot to sustain the community. So that's how it got its name. It became a black area once blacks started to migrate to the area in significant numbers. So between the 20s and the 30s, it became a black area because whites were moving out. The European immigrants were moving out, and black people were steady moving in or settling in the area. So it's not Black Bottom because it was black people there.
Okay.
It became a black area eventually.
Right.
And then became the straight ghetto eventually.
Well, yeah, it was probably a ghetto before that, but
yeah,
in that ghetto, you...
Though.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because like I say, my mother and them grew up on Hastings Street. So it's always been a ghetto, but it got worse as more and more urban Afro-Americans moved in that area.
Well, it depends on what you mean by worse. I mean, Black Bottom had its struggles, but there were some good times in Black Bottom, too. Again, black people are moving in, and they're opening up their businesses. The Italians and the Jewish merchants are leaving the area, selling their stores and businesses to, and helping black people open up businesses. And there was a period, particularly the 40s, because you're seeing a new black middle class emerge because they're working in factories now. So there were some good times in Black Bottom. There's a reason why that area, the Hastings Street, was called Paradise Valley, for instance.
There was good times.
I mean, you're talking about people that are coming from the sharecropper reality.
From down south. Some of them came from Talladega, Alabama. My grandparents came from Talladega, Alabama, and moved straight to Hastings Street. So, yeah, I definitely know about that part of the game. But, you know, as time went on, the blacks started selling their gas stations, if you can remember, in the early 70s and late 60s to when the Chaldeans started moving in. You know, the Arabs started moving in. And then next thing you know, the Arabs started owning every gas station, started owning every drugstore on the corner where you buy liquor at, and they started owning all the, you know, supermarkets. So it was just a whole big change as the 70s and late 60s grew, you know?
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, I would argue that the change happened way before that. I think when Black Bottom was demolished, black businesses are being relocated and dislocated too.
Right.
So, yeah, you got the 70s where you're talking about black people selling their businesses.
Right.
But I think excuse me?
I say they just start selling out because we used to go to this one gas station, and it was all, you know, urban gas station. Next thing you know, the Arabs started owning the gas station.
Yeah.
And all through the years, you know, from the 70s all the way up to now, to the 2000s, you go on every corner, every liquor store, the A-Rap's on
sure.
it. Every supermarket, the A-Rap's on it. Every Coney
right.
Island in the city, the A-Rap's on it. The brothers
mm-hmm.
don't own none of that. You know what I mean? And
right.
once Coney Island started getting put up, and you know for yourself growing up in the city, you know, they 24 hours a day. And that had never been in the city until the A-Rap started coming and put
right.
all the Coney Islands in the city. And then everybody would eat, you know what I mean, all night long and hang out at the Coney Island, you know what I mean, on Mac and Shane.
Right.
I mean, at the
right,
19 hole or the back street over by, you know, Newsom Junior High School, you know. So it
right.
was just a one big thing, you know, that I seen growing up how the change started as well, you know what I mean? And
sure.
I always wonder why the brothers started selling out, because like you said and iterated that the brothers did own gas stations, they did own stores, you know what I mean, and everybody
yeah.
was doing cool. But the next thing you know, you look around, A-Rap was owning everything in the city of Detroit.
Right.
Yeah, so we're having a great talk tonight with my man Mr. Williams, and we're going to go to another song. We're going to come right back with him, because he's definitely doing his thing, and we are definitely going to speak a little bit more on his book. We'll be right back with Mr. Williams.
What's up, what's up? This RB checking in, but the streets don't love you back. The movement is on, baby. Letting you know, me and LD talking about that thug / drug life. Let me tell you a little lesson, players. In these streets, baby, they'll never love you back. Trust that.
No, these streets, they don't love you, they don't love you.
Everybody's around here talking about all that thug life, player. Talking about that drug dealing thing. Tell you, baby, it's about getting your life together, getting your head on tight, doing something with your life, and stop destroying your community and stop destroying yourself, baby. So when the people come at you, they come for real, player. Homeboys on my team done got 400 million before, baby. 100 million, baby. Now they sitting on death row, baby. That's where you wanna be, player. Cause the drug game is washed up. The thug game is washed up, baby. They put it in our communities, baby, and they tell us off the top, yeah, you can make this, you can make that, but once they come for you, game over, lights out. Do what you feel, do what you want to do, baby, but join the movement. It's the streets, baby, they don't love you back. It's the streets, baby, they don't love you back. Come on, come on. Here is a track of knowledge, you feel me? Want all young brothers and sisters across America to understand that the drug game, the thug life, that's all washed up right now. Take heed, learn from players that done live that life, you feel me? Much love to my man, the real Freeway Ricky Ross. Just step down May 4th, we sending you much love out there to Cali, you feel me? Much love to everybody across the state to state who roll with the movement. It's time to open your eyes up, people. It's time to rise up above all this street thing, you feel me? It's a better way. Let's do this.
It's moments like this when my back's against the fence that I say fuck the fence. Life is just I gotta go and get a bit. Got get caught up in moves. Shit, I'm strong. It started from my home, so I'm at home with pressures. Are we all alone? When we born, we all alone. When we die, we need to get our shit together. We can make it if we try. We'll probably make it if you cry. But I hate it when you whine. And if all this truth is up, then you can take it when you die. I'm on my grind, cause all I got is time. But maybe it's enough. But if it's not, then let me know. Cause I feel like I'm a bust. I'm overstuffed with propaganda. This is slander. fucking lies. Tried to slick the public and then wonder why there's crimes and murders on the rise. Cause we ain't got a dime. Shit, I'ma hurt your fucking body. You can see it in my eyes. I lie awake sometimes at night and ponder how to get ahead. Jump out of bed, paranoid. I'm going backwards instead. Feel like my feet is full of lead. Cause I just can't move. Freestyle life off the head. Cause I don't know what to do. I need to make a couple moves. I need to make a couple moves. I need to make a couple moves. But I gotta stay free, cause each and everything I do and say affects my seed. Decide what's the truth, separated from fallacy. Separate what I want from the things that I need. And try to make a way for everything to be okay. Stay focused on my goals so you never stray away. Let the past be the past and your future's okay. Pay attention to the present, living in it every day. Come
on. Let it all be checking back in with you. Like I said, just that traffic knowledge. Then you young brothers and sisters understand that, hey, the street life, that's a dead issue. That's a dead game. That's all washed up. Let's get our life together. Let's do what we need to do. Let's love more, hate none. RB, love, one. Much love to Lucinda, my manager, and my man LD. Let's do it. 100. Out.
Yeah, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, welcome right back here at the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show, and we're doing our thing tonight, and we're here talking with my man, Mr. Williams, about his book, and we just want everyone to know that we got a couple of announcements, and one announcement before we get back to Mr. Williams is that Miss Jack Brown Books, we're giving her a shout-out once again. For allowing us to put our book in her establishment, and we sending her much love out there in Oregon, Miss Jack Brown. So we just want to keep insinuating that. And if you need to know any information where the book is at and what city it's in, just log on at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.neem.com. Thank you very much, and we'll turn it back over to Lucinda.
And if you'd like to call in, ask a question or give us a comment, our number is 347-826-7273. And we'd like to welcome Jeremy back to the show.
Thank you.
And, so, as you said before, though, you grew up in that area and you saw all the drugs and the changes in the streets that were going on. You saw some of your friends and maybe family, I don't know, be killed due to all the drugs that were going on down at that time in the 80s. Do you think that by seeing all that going on, that also had a big impact on you, that you didn't want to get involved in that stuff and wanted to have better than that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think the major deterrent to that type of lifestyle, again, it was my mom. And then I had brothers, older brothers, and I had older sisters that kind of kept an eye on me. But, you know, watching my friend across the street get shot, you know, that shook me up a little bit. And I guess it scared me straight, you know.
Right. Well, that's a good thing. Did you find any other different statistics as you were doing research for your book?
Well, it's very hard to look at or to think about Black history without examining the racial aspect of Black life, Black American life. But what I came to understand is that a lot of what was going on in Black Bottom had a lot to do really just with the economy. For instance, when the racial tension grew between the white people that were living in Black Bottom and the southern migrants who were moving into the area, it really wasn't a racial thing. It was you had ethnic whites coming in from Europe who were used to a certain way of life. They were used to living in small villages, small communities in various parts of Europe, and they come here to find a better way of life here in America. And then you have the Black people coming from the South, and of course you had a conflict. But it really wasn't a racial thing as much as it was that those whites in that area were just trying to protect their economic interest. You know, they didn't want blacks moving in to taking their jobs and disrupting their way of life. And I think the racial element, racism, the racial tension began when, again, migrants are trying to come in and take white jobs. And but it really didn't become a racial issue until the white ethnics began to become acculturated and assimilated into the American life. And what that meant was to be an American, to be a white American, meant to hate black people. You know what I mean? So I think it started off as an economic conflict and grew into a racial one. And so studying Black Bottom from that perspective took my perspective beyond the racial factor and situated more into an economic perspective.
Okay, we do have a caller, so let's answer this call. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Hello?
Yeah, we got another call on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Is that Ms. Walls there? I guess they're not on. But anyway, Mr. Williams, I wanted to just iterate when you start doing the research on your book. Where were you looking to take all this information to, as far as touching what audience and what people were you looking to touch to put this information in their ears?
Well, that's a good question because it's not really the book. Really, yeah, it spends a lot of time looking at black people in Black Bottom, but it's really the first chapter is on the European immigrants, where I'm dealing with the Poles, the Jews, the Russians, the Greeks, the Italians, and life, what life was like for them in Black Bottom. So the book is abroad. I was trying to reach out to a broad audience, particularly in Michigan, where a lot of whites in Michigan can trace their history right back to Black Bottom. So it's not necessarily a black book. There's a black face on the cover, and that's really maybe an unfortunate thing, because what happens is the book gets put in an African-American history section at Barnes & Noble, for instance, when it's really a general history book. Mm-hmm. So the book is for, you know, it's an American history book, not really an African American history book.
Right. So it's for everybody, no matter who.
It's for everybody. Right.
No matter who you is, you can go out and pick that book up, and you can just read about how things was back in them days, and you can kind of experience that living by reading what's in the manuscript. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, let me give you an example. When I got a call from Hamtramck Library and even Southfield and Royal Oak Libraries to come there and lecture on a book, and the lady at Hamtramck, who was of Polish descent, knew about Black Bottom. She said she had family that lived there, and she was very excited about the book because she could relate to it. So again, it's not just a black book. It's really because it deals with whites and blacks in Black
right.
Bottom. Yeah,
that's interesting.
That sounds great. So what we're gonna do? We're gonna go to a commercial, and we're gonna come back with Mr. Williams. We're kicking it with Mr. Williams tonight with his book, with the Black Bottom's book and the Black Bottom history. So we'll be right back after these couple of commercials.
I'm gonna play my guitar.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
I gotta do right before they call me home. A&A Printing. Whether you need a million novels printed or just a few flyers, you owe it to yourself to check out A&A Printing. With A&A Printing, you can turn your next project or marketing campaign into an economic success. A&A Printing is priced to fit your small business budget. So give them a call at 206-285-1700 and ask for Steve, or email at sales@aaprinting.com. That's 206-285-1700. 206-285-1700. A&A Printing. Don't forget, ask for Steve and tell him the streets don't love you back sent you.
And welcome back to the Streets Back on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight we're talking with Jeremy Williams. He's the author of the Black Bottom Community book, and discussing with him the history of the Black Bottom area. And if you guys haven't got the book, you need to go to the bookstore and get it. It sounds like an awesome book, and I can't wait to read it myself. Mr. Jeremy, if you could do one thing to change what you did during the road to your publication, what would that be?
I probably would have added some different or more pictures to it. I probably would have reached out to more of the survivors. I was able to find some people who actually lived in Black Bottom. Remembered Coleman Young, for instance, hung out with him. I probably would have had more interviews with people who actually lived in Black Bottom and got those perspectives and weaved them into the book. But I'm satisfied with the book. My editor is satisfied, so I wouldn't get too much different. But you know, when I got done with it and sent the manuscript off to Chicago, you know, I'm sitting at my desk and looking over some pictures, and I'm like, oh wow, I should have put that in there. But that's just really what anybody, any writer or artist does after, you know, you're never satisfied with your work. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's always you're always thinking what you could have done different or
right.
better. So yeah, I went through that for a minute, but it's still a good book.
Yeah. The longer you wait, you I could put this in the book, or I could put that in the book, and you'd never get
once,
it published though.
once it goes to your editor and they send you back the proofs, they give you maybe one or two chances to change things. And once it hits the press, you know, it's over. You know, let it go, right?
Right. So, what do you plan on doing next?
I got a few irons in the fire. I'm going to write a play on Black Bottom. I'm going to do that with Larry Lucido, who is a lawyer in Southfield, and he's working on a book, a detective book, a detective mystery, which is situated in Black Bottom. And then I'm currently working on a new book called The Detroit Urban League. And then I'm finishing up a novel that I was working on when I got the contract for this book, and I had to kind of push it to the side, and I'm going to get back to that. So I'm going to keep busy. I do review books and stuff like that. I run a blog, and so I'm always writing. I'm always working.
Good. Jeremy, what would you tell the youth today, you know, after what you saw in your community growing up and how you you know things are now, but what would you tell the community as far as respect and morals and values?
Well, one of the things that I think the book speaks directly to that question. One of the things I found out that really amazed me is what people did then with little, and what we're doing today with more. You know,
right.
So I think the book is good in the sense that it shows us what real struggle is, what real racism is. And today you're not confronted with the issue that they were then. So the book gives you, it motivates you to say, hey, if these people could overcome obstacles, real obstacles then, boy, you know, think of what I could do today.
Right, exactly. And have you ever been to Cincinnati to the Underground Freedom Center?
No. I've been to Cincinnati, but not there.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance to go there, it's an awesome, awesome museum, and it's, you know, it's about, you know, it's a lot of Black history, and it's, you know, how the Underground took place back in those days, and just history throughout the years. But, you know, it's just an awesome, awesome place, you know, to visit it. It opens your eyes to a lot of different things, and, you know, that's what I'm constantly telling everybody, is that it only takes one person, you know, to change,
right.
Make a change, and,
right.
And you can see that through history over and over.
Yeah, well, I think today the reason why you have a lot of complacency, particularly in Detroit, is because people don't realize that there are things that they could do to better the community, and they don't believe that there is still an issue. You know what I mean? People become complacent. They, you know, you got your job, or you got your car, you got your house, and people just really don't give a crap anymore. So I think the book will shed light on that issue of the then and the nowness of what's going on in Detroit.
Right. Okay, I'm going to turn the questions back over to Mr. Boyd.
All right, we're going to get right back down to the nitty-gritty. Mr. Williams, I would like for you to just tell the youth, when you was growing up, to your nature, what advice would you give them from when you was growing up to now at what you see going on rapidly with the youth of today?
You know, education, go to school and get an education. I think that is one of the major hindrances to Black uplift, is kids are dropping out of school and they're having kids and not continuing with their education. I would say go to school, read, and get a degree, get an education, because that is the number one way to economic and spiritual and intellectual freedom and enlightenment.
Right, and that's a good point right there, you know, because we must definitely educate the youths out here, educate them more and keep them out of prisons less, you know. That's
right.
Me and Lucinda's motto. We must educate them more and keep them out the gates less, because the gates is not a place you want to be, and the gates is not a place for nobody to be, especially when you got a mind that can do better, you know, than being in the gates. So we must.
There are people that are doing it, you know, not just you and your wife, but there are people who are in the community affecting change. Nikki Love in Atlanta, Georgia, her and Brother Unk are doing some good things. They go out into the community, have food drives, clothes drives, to go to the libraries and lecture on history and try to get kids into the library. There are people doing some great things, but probably not enough in the
right.
Inner cities.
Right, and I'm glad you spoke on that, and I appreciate that, because me and Lucinda, we definitely do a lot, and we're gearing up to do a lot with our new show, Change. And the new show, Change, is definitely about people who has done lived out here in this life and that's done really changed their life, and that can enlighten these young kids out here, is that, you know, you're living a life or trying to live a life that would just destroy you the more you keep trying to be in the street or trying to be cool or try to do something to, you know, be around and be a part of something that you know is totally negative, you know? And,
right.
You know, it's just your way of getting caught up in something.
Right.
Sometimes, like the old folks say, you get into something, you can't get yourself out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we must definitely uplift that daily, you know?
Yeah, another thing, we're talking about the youth, but even the older people who may not be able to get involved in some activist movement in the community, but give money, you know, donate money to organizations like yours and Nikki Love. She's always trying to reach out to people to donate money to her cause. And again, you know, just if you can't go out and picket or work to change somebody's life on a personal level, then give money. I mean, we go spend our money on clothes and frivolous stuff when, you know, $5, $10, $20 to an organization like yours or others makes a difference.
Right.
I mean, black upliftment movements have always started with people donating money, particularly to the church or whatever, but it's always started with the black community or any struggling community with the people giving money, giving resources, clothes or food or whatever. Again, you just don't have that anymore.
Yeah,
not on a large enough scale.
No, not at all, you know. So we definitely having a good moment here with Mr. Williams, and we're going to go to one of our other songs on the air, and we're going to come back with Mr. Williams.
You're so funny.
You're so funny. I love you, sweetie.
My princess.
I can't see your face here every day. I still cry, Daddy's gonna make everything alright. I promise to never leave you, I swear I'm gonna stay right by your side. But if by chance or fate I can't see your face there every day, I still take the tears away to make you happy, whatever it takes.
Welcome right back here to the Streets of Love Back radio show. And we're kicking it tonight with Mr. Williams. And we just want to have Mr. Williams, any last shout-outs, anything he would like to say before we leave off the air?
The book is actually due out October the 26th. But it's on pre-order now at any online book site. And I'm going to be on tour beginning next month, I think the 30th, straight through November all the way till May. You can get on my website and check out the schedule and come out and hang out with me. I'll be doing lectures and everything on the book, and come on out and hang out with me.
Sounds good. Right now we are gonna say, like we always do, our last announcements. We'll let Miss Lucinda say her announcements, and then I'll do the backup with my last announcements.
Okay, we'd just like to thank Jeremy for being our guest here tonight on the Streets Don't Love You Back show, and we wish you continued success with your new book and with you.
Thank you.
The other books that you're working on as well.
Thank you.
We would just like to remind you again that you can also purchase our new release out on the Streets Don't Love You Back .ming.com, as well as all the websites on our homepage. And also our soundtrack is being released on October 1st, and you can also get that at all the stores that you find the book at as well. Join us every Wednesday night, 8:30 p.m. Pacific Time, 11:30 Eastern Time. And remember to take responsibility for your choices and actions, and get an education. And that's what we're pushing. Get that education and stay off the street.
All right, and that's just as beautiful. And then I'll follow up once again, thanking everybody who has joined the movement, everybody that's down with the movement, everybody who's spreading the word. We thanking you all, me and Lucinda, and we thanking everyone who's doing street team work with us as well, and everybody who carries the book and promote the book. We definitely thanking you as well. And once again, I'm very happy that our book is in the museum back in my hometown, Detroit, and it will be in the rare book section. So that has definitely made me and Lucinda happy right there. And that's a blessing. And the book will be there, and after we dead and gone, and we've done made history, and the book will be read from years to come. So we hope it continue helping the youth and other people as well to understand that the streets will never love them back, and continue getting education, because that's the only thing that's going to get you where you need to be. Selling drugs is not going to get you out the ghetto. It will constantly keep you there if it don't kill you first. So education is the way to get out the ghetto. So stop letting them lie to you and thinking the hustle world is getting you out. So we're going to go ahead and play our last song that we always play. And we're going to say, always remember that the streets don't love you back. And good night. And thank you once again, Mr. Williams, for coming on. Have a great
day. Thank you for having me.
Good night.
Yeah. LD. You know, far too often, we look back in hindsight and wish, say, I wish I just had one more chance. This is it. This is it. That second chance.
I done let down the best of my years. But you can see the drive in my eyes and the hidden surprise, because I haven't searched up to fear. With my chance in the sky high, soak the sunshine like it's on the line with no place for tears. I'm in need of a change, maybe from the inside out. Let these two up for strangers try to shut my mouth. I done seen a lot of things that I never talk about. If I could do it all again, I never let them in my house. I done made some mistakes, apologize and reconcile. I done changed all my ways from what I was as a child. Stood on my mama, great rain pour down from the clouds. Dropped to my knees and pray that I have a reason to smile. Was a young looking hard, running around in these streets, chasing girls, thought I learned all the world had to teach. But one day I lied awake, realized I didn't know shit, and it hit me like a brick. Wish I could do it all again, but I can't, and I ain't. Anyway, I read and rave, write my future like a book. As I turn another page, as the lights go down, I walk across the stage, rub the log for luck, but more importantly, I pray that everything will be okay. And somehow I know it is. All I gotta do right now is get through this bullshit. Keep my chin to the sky, bring my back against the wall. Fuck out, I will fight, scratch and claw, and still stand tall in the belly of the beast. Be afraid of nothing in this world, it's got to be. Sometimes I feel slip if I forget my sleep, but that's why I hit my knees soon as I leave the sheet. No more waiting. Life is not a game. Sometimes you might not get a second chance. Don't be jealous of others. Do for your damn self.